take your Bibles and turn to 1 Timothy chapter 2. 1 Timothy chapter 2 this morning. And if you looked at the title on the front of your bulletin, you're going to go, is he talking about fashion this morning? Well, partly. This morning, 1 Timothy chapter 2. And as I said to a number of people, I'm stepping into it today. But when you teach the Bible, and that's what my habit is just to go through different books of the Bible, you invariably can't just dance around things. You run into them and you say, okay, what am I going to do with this? Or what are we going to do with this and what is this all about? That's where we have entered this morning. Message I'm entitling The Propriety of, I probably should have added a word I was thinking this morning, and if you want to add that, you can. The Propriety of a Christian Woman. The Propriety of a Christian Woman. And by propriety, I mean what is proper? What is etiquette? What is the appropriate behavior and role of a Christian woman? We'll talk about, and to the men, and next time, although that's inferred here, and we'll talk about that as well. Back in 1982, I graduated with a Bachelor of Arts degree from UBC in sociology. That is some of my background. Actually, when I started college, I was actually a pre-med major, majoring in biochemistry. And that's a whole story in itself of how I ended up with a bachelor's in sociology, and that is a major switch. But the Lord never left me alone, and so that was sort of a prep for pastoral ministry. And I have always found that to be very helpful, some of my undergraduate background. And I've always been fascinated with culture and traditions and lifestyle. Both locally and around the world, I have always found to be a very interesting and fascinating thing. Maybe that comes out of my own ethnic background as culturally Mennonite, and you have a look into this culture, and you see cultural elements as they've come from a different place, and that group of people transplanted themselves here in Western Canada, I saw as being in the middle of it how adaptation needed to take place and the difficulty with adaptation and all those kinds of things. And I found culture to be very interesting. And I appreciate culture. I love food that many people will look at and go, ooh, how can you eat that? But it's part of the culture. I was not fully immersed because my dad would eat pickled chicken legs. He'd crunch on them. He thought this was just great. But it's culture, isn't it? And we love to travel. I've seen many different places in the world. I remember one time on a missions trip to Fiji. We were ready for the first dinner, and we're waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. We're supposed to meet at 6:30, and we're meeting at this hall that they used as a church, and all of a sudden it's 7:15, and finally people started to arrive. And we had to realize that we are no longer on North American time; we are now on Fijian time. And time didn't have the same meaning, and everything's kind of, if you would translate it into Spanish culture, perhaps mañana would be the word. And there's no hurry, and for this Western time clock of ahead, this just drives you crazy. That's its culture. But anyway, we got to the church, and we the food was all put out for us, and it's like big buffet spread. People would bring this potluck stuff, and it looked good, and on and on and on and on. I got to the end, and I'm going, where's the cutlery? There's no cutlery. You use your hands, and you got a little of the bread you would use to. It was cult. Whoops, excuse me. That's culture. I found that interesting. We have been to five different provinces, or I have been to five different provinces, but 40 states. I'd like to hit all 50 before I before I finish my life, but that's on my bucket list. I have 40, and I've been to 16 countries. I actually added them up. I said, how many countries have I been to? And so that's been a very enriching experience to have seen many parts of the world in different cultures and to have experienced them. I remember being on another missions trip, we're visiting some missionary friends in Thailand, and to see the religiosity of the people and all the superstitions and the things. I mean, it's just everywhere. There's another shrine, there's another Buddha, there's something else. And realize that this culture is very different than Western culture. Marcella grew up in the South, or her mother grew up in the South in the Southern states, and that's a whole, again, another culture. We've experienced that many times, and I have just come to love biscuits and gravy. I haven't gotten too much into the grits yet, but it's, and these interesting vegetables. It's culture. Fascinating. There are differences in different parts of the world, but everything is always in flux. Right? Culture changes. There's cultural changes all around us, and it requires constant adaptation. But the question that we will enter into this morning is, that's true. And the question then becomes, how much does the church adapt to the culture? And what things are cultural and what things are what we might call supracultural, that transcend culture? What of our culture is neutral and what of our culture has moral or values connected with it? So we need to engage our minds this morning to think about these kinds of things. A culture is just easy to go along with. Everybody's doing it, and so we just kind of go along, and we just get on the train, and the train takes us. But sometimes we need to stop and say, where is this train going? And is this a godly train? More specifically, when should the church adapt and when not? Some things, I think, are always changing, and we sing this morning in a worship service with a team, and we've got many instruments. That's not, when I was 10 years old, we did not have this. We had a piano and an organ and a choir and hymn books. Those are, I think they're still in the pew. Do we have, I don't even know. They're books with music, and people actually read the lines and sang the parts. That's what I grew up with. But we don't do that anymore. We don't sing Gregorian chants. It's cultural how we express our worship to the Lord. It's not right or wrong, but they're different. And I think one of the challenges of the contemporary church is to blend that so we all can worship in the language of our hearts. And that's not always easy. I think it can be done. It requires a broadening of our thoughts and a broadening of what we appreciate. And that's good for us. Culture changes in terms of what we wear to church. This morning I said, it's communion, I think I'll wear a tie, but I don't typically do that. That would have not happened 50 years ago. In fact, we had a lady in our other church who was the tie monitor. And if I didn't have a tie on, she would let me know. Dear Joyce, wonderful lady, but she was old school, and the tie was the thing. Right? And so that's changed. And so this is now quite formal, and I know some guys, we'll wear, the keds and the jeans, the stovepipes, and I said to Daria, should I wear that? She said, oh, no, not you, Dad. You're 57, not 27. And sometimes it's weird when we try to dress that's not us. But neither do I still, I was a child of the 70s. Anybody remember we used to have those nice high platform shoes? The men had them too. I would have been 6'4". And I had this nice navy blue suit. And we had the bell-bottom pants, and they're like this wide, and And then they're frayed on the bottom, and right? I remember I used to cut off the old jeans, and those were our shorts, and then we'd fray them. That was cool. I'd be kind of a geek wearing that kind of stuff around, right? But customs change, culture changes. But our culture is also changed in terms of some other issues. Only say some are neutral. For some, maybe they're not neutral, but, you know, we debate those things. But there are other cultural changes that have come into play as well. And what does the church do with those? The issue of, especially today, sexuality. Or divorce. Or the right to life. Right? These are cultural changes that are very real in our world. And what do we do with those? This isn't simply platform shoes. This is giving a needle to granny because she's too old and wants to die. These are large issues. And so what we're talking about this morning is culture, or is it culture, and how do we connect those dots? What principles are cultural and what are timeless? And so this morning we arrive at one of those issues, and it is a powder keg issue, because we are intersecting the scriptures with the world and culture, and we have to try to figure out what we do with that, because they're colliding. It's controversial. It is divisive. Even within our own Christian Missionary and Alliance churches, this is it's a powder keg. And it is very possible that a denomination will divide over this. So we really need to look at it and say, okay, what do we do with this? My goal is not simply, or hopefully not to simply give you an opinion. My goal is to look at the text and try to honestly come to grips with what it says. I really want to do that. I want to be honest with the text and see where we come out. And I may have some disagreement, but I just want to, let's talk about the text. Okay? I was originally going to do the whole text in this morning. I couldn't get there. I got to Friday and I said, I need 2 weeks here if we're going to do this justice, for you to follow along with me and to go with it. So part one today, part two next week. We'll do a little bit of review for those who aren't here, but that's where we're going. So be patient, I ask you, but I hope to come out at the end and we can engage in some dialogue if we need to. Can we come to a conclusion ourselves, or do we just leave it for someone else to decide and everybody kind of do their own thing? That will be ultimately what we will talk about. Now, this text comes to us under the guise, under most discussion, as women in ministry, or the role of women in ministry. I think it's a misnomer. We know what we mean by the phrase, but that's not the issue. Women can do ministry. So let's just put that aside right now. This is about a specific, at least piece of the text, is about specific roles of women in specific ministries. We'll get there. Okay. But today's text lands us right in the middle of a very key discussion today in our evangelical churches. It's not only in our own denomination, it is in every denomination. And it's in every church. I'm part of a Facebook, private Facebook group, and it's the whole Facebook group is about this issue. It tells you that it's significant. It's called the Complementarian Fellowship, and you got to get an invitation to even get in. So just to help you understand that we're talking about key points in our culture today and in our churches. But the key issue here is what we're going to be talking about cultural, or is it timeless? And how are we to decide, and can we decide? And so, because of the significance, I'm not going to rush through this, and we'll see if we can come to some conclusion as we walk through this. I would encourage you also to remind you that we want to come under the authority of the Scriptures. The temptation is always to make it say what we want it to say. And I resist that temptation all the time. Oh, Lord, you can't mean that, right? Sometimes it says something that you don't like, and we go, oh, it's got to mean something else. And it means that. Now, also, we'll say that there are things that are cultural, and we'll talk about that. We want to discern how to study this well. And so 1 Timothy chapter 2, that's a fairly long introduction, but we're not going to get through it all anyway. Let's read it together, verses 9 to 15. Paul has been talking about the church and the proper way of doing church. And he's talked about, first of all, we begin with prayer. And then he talks about the men and lifting up holy hands in prayer without wrath and without doubting. And he talks about, as he's left off last time, how the men were to conduct the leadership in prayer in the church. He now shifts gears, and then he comes back to the eldership discussion after this section. But now we're in this section where he's addressing the women in church. Likewise, he says also that women should adorn themselves in respectable apparel with modesty and self-control, not with braided hair and gold or pearls or costly attire, but with what is proper for women who profess godliness with good works. Let a woman learn quietly with all submissiveness. I do not permit a woman to teach or to exercise authority over a man. Rather, she is to remain quiet. Next verse. For Adam was formed first, then Eve, and Adam was not deceived, but the woman who was deceived and became a transgressor. Yet she will be saved through childbearing if they continue in faith and love and holiness with self-control. All right. What do we do with that? Paul is writing to Timothy about the church and the function of the church and how the church is to operate. Begins, as I said, with the defense of doctrine and with the priority of prayer in the church. And he concludes now with instructions regarding that topic. How men were to pray. And the inference here is that the men are leading in prayer in the congregation. And he gives instructions regarding that, and he says, men, when you pray, when you lead in prayer, you need to do this without arguing, without disputing, without being mad at one another, because then God will not answer and listen to prayer. And we talked about prayer last week. It was interesting over this past week where I've gotten some email feedback about how God has answered prayer, that God is in the business of praying. But when we pray unified in love. And again, we'll come back to the issue of the men in leadership and among the elders next time. But now he continues on. He moves into the section now regarding the role of the women in the congregation as they get together for worship at church. And what is proper behavior in the context of the gathered church community for the other half, for the ladies that come? And as he addresses this issue, I would suggest to you that there are three key matters that he draws upon regarding what I would call the propriety of Christian women. What is the role of the woman? I want to look at three issues. First of all, as Paul does here, I would have you see her adornment. Her adornment in verses 9 and 10. We're not even talking yet about specific ministry function. We're talking in broader brush strokes, but I think it's very relevant and practical as it addresses the next issue. But first of all, her adornment. And two things that Paul says. First of all, he says that her apparel is to be respectable. Her apparel is to be respectable. Verses 9 and the first part of 10. Likewise, he says, Likewise, in regard to the deportment within the church, this is how I want the women to act. And he begins not with role, he begins with dress, if you've noticed that. Now again, I suggest to you that dress is a cross-cultural issue. I've been around the world, and I don't think I'm sexist by saying there is a difference between women and men when it comes to clothes, right? I've seen this in many cultures. The women pay much more attention to how they look than the guys. Is that perhaps, I don't think I'm overstepping the bounds on that one. Is that perhaps right? I remember being in New York City the first time with Marcella, and we went into Macy's. I said, well, you know, she said, oh, I'll take some time here and look. I said, I'll see what's up in the menswear. Well, you come into Macy's, and the first floor, this is in Manhattan, the whole floor, it is a city block of perfume, makeup, and jewelry. A block. And then I go into the directory. Cosmetics, first floor, women's apparel, second floor, third floor, fourth floor, man, seventh floor corner. Well, that's a bit of an exaggeration, but right, it's who we are. We're different. If you feel the difference, thank you, Richard. There's a difference. We're not saying anything wrong. I am glad God made women that way. They're more beautiful than men, and they dress it, and that's important. It's a part of their fabric and a part of their makeup. They want to look good. My mom was always, you know, my dad, you know, give me Otter Farmers Co-op, get me the boots and the jeans, and I'm happy. And I don't care if they're falling apart. They're comfortable. I'm happy. But my mom, she liked the Bay, and she was, you know, the department store, and she'd buy this, and then, you know, she didn't know, and that was just who she was. I mean, you grow up with that. You see that. We're different. And so I think Paul addresses that issue here in terms of when you come to church, what do you do with that? And because there's a danger of pushing that too far. And so he begins with how women are to dress. He says, I want you to dress with respectable apparel. Respectable. Someone had said, women are to dress in good taste when they prepare to come to church. Look appropriate. Now, the two words that he uses here are with modesty and self-control. Modesty meaning not overly extravagant, the idea in that term. And self-control with sound judgment and with good sense and good taste. He clarifies what he means in the last phrase of verse 9 when he says, not with braided hair and gold or pearls or costly attire. Now stop there. We need to be very careful. We do not take this woodenly. And I'll explain that in just a moment. Maybe I should go there right now. Go to 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 3, the parallel passage. 1 Peter 3 and verse 3. Talks about wives, and in verse 3 Peter talks about how they're to dress as well. He says, do not let your adorning be external. Now, if we stop there, basically, but you take that very woodenly, he says, don't dress. That's not what he's saying. Then he describes it, the braiding of hair, the putting on of gold jewelry, or the clothing you wear. What's Paul saying? He says this is a place, when it comes to your dress, of appropriateness. Is he saying not to braid your hair or wear your jewelry? No, he's saying do not make this your emphasis. Do not make all your concern about how you look on the outside. And in fact, I think what he is saying here is you shouldn't be drawing attention to where people go, wow, what's she wearing today? Where that person would be looking very out of place in a church setting. And in what he is describing there, he's almost describing what a prostitute would look like. This excessiveness of outward appearance. This flamboyancy that is in the extreme. If he was speaking in the age in which I grew up back in the 70s, he said, gals, he would say, when you come to church, no mini skirts and or halter tops, please. That's the point. This suggestiveness, this over-the-topness about the jewels and the clothes and the fashions. Be modest. Don't be over the top. Don't look in an alluring way where the guys are going to kind of, wow. And I would say that's not only appropriate for church, but anywhere that we, gals, look. It's important how you dress, and I like a well-dressed. Marcella has nice clothes. I appreciate that she wants to dress appropriately. But there's a modesty to this that he's talking about. I remember in a previous church, it was actually one of the ladies who, she was actually not so young anymore, but she wanted to be young. And she would wear, when she was on the worship team, things that people would talk about. And we were on a platform that it was about 4 steps high, and she would wear quite short skirts, and it was distracting. And maybe that's what I think what Paul would be say, don't be distractive in what you wear. You shouldn't be noticed or be leered at, that you set yourself up for that. Now, there's nothing wrong with nice clothes, but he says, with modesty, look appropriate, not over the top, not prudish. I don't think that's what he's talking about here, but not immodest, not seductive. And we all know the difference, don't we? Right? We all know. Where you can dress where you just, guys know, and I think the girls know too, what's appropriate. And we live in an age of quite loose sexual morals, and we need to be careful about that. And I just address the ladies here that guys see, and we don't want to be distraction. I think that's where Paul begins. 1 Peter 3:3 again, do not let your adorning be external, the braiding of your hair, the putting on of gold jewelry, or the clothing you wear, but let your, and he talks about what we're going to talk about in just a moment, the inward quality of beauty. It's a point of contrast. He says, but what is proper, he says. I like what one author, he said, the beauty for the woman should primarily come from within. That given the beauty, the inward part is more important. I like what Alistair Begg said. A woman's dress is the mirror of her mind. A woman's dress is the mirror of her mind. You can see, tell a lot about what's inside, but what she wears on the outside. That's how she exposes herself. And so just a caution here, but also a very positive caution. Modest, nothing wrong with beauty, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But where's the priority? So her apparel is to be respectable. Secondly, her actions are to be honorable. Her actions are to be honorable. Second half of verse 10. But with what is proper for women who profess godliness? With good works. With good works. Again, back in 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 4, Peter goes on, but let your adorning be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which in God's sight is very precious. And then he goes on, to talk a little bit about Sarah. He says, Sarah should be your model of this inner beauty, this gentle spirit. Now, I did a little background checking in terms of Sarah. Well, you know, she must have, you know, been not much to look at. And so, you know, that's what I said. Well, she's not that beautiful on the outside, but she's really beautiful inside, right? We kind of, as though that doesn't matter. But I look back, and I found this really interesting. Go back to Genesis chapter 12. It talks about Sarah. Genesis chapter 12, and verse 10. If she's our model. Genesis 12, 10, it says, there was a famine in the land, so Abram went down to Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was very severe in the land. When he was about to enter Egypt, he said to Sarai, his wife, I know that you are a woman. Now, anybody there, tell me what he says about his wife. I know you're a woman that's not much to look at. Is that what he says? He says, she's beautiful in appearance. Oh, that's interesting. Sarah is the model, and Abraham says, and I think that's, we need to do that more with our own wives, and say, I know you're beautiful to look at, and the guys are going to want to chase you. But, and then he goes down this side street and gets himself into trouble because the guys do. And he said, just say you're my sister. Okay. So anyways, Sarah is a beautiful woman. But the model for her beauty is not to be the external model. It is to be what came from the inside. That's the exhortation to the church, and to the women in the church. A Christian woman is to be beautiful inside. The emphasis is to be inside. And the contrast here is for emphasis. Not that you shouldn't look appropriately. I like the saying by, where did I have him here? J. Vernon McGee. He said, if the bar needs painting, paint it. It's okay, right? Yeah, you dress appropriately, dress nicely, but the emphasis is from within. The beauty, the tranquility should be within. And so I would ask you, even as a Christian woman, do you spend as much time in the Word as you do in front of the mirror? As much time with the Lord as you do in the mall? Because that's the important place to be. Is service as important as fashion? That actually leads well into the next section. Because it talks about attitude. That wanting to be godly, wanting to be what a God's woman is the most important thing in your life. You see, a woman's role in church is part of a package in which the inner character takes precedence. It is not a loud, flashy, seductive appeal that she should be after, but rather a tranquil, gentle, feminine attractiveness. A softness of spirit, as someone said, a beauty of personality. That's God's kind of woman. And we'll talk more about that as we enter into the next section. So Paul first deals with the propriety of what takes place within a Christian woman. This gentle character, this demeanor that lays the foundation for what we will talk about next. For character shapes the discussion about her role in the church, and it's part of a bigger picture. But I also understand that we have a world that tells us something completely different. That tells a woman that her value lies in what she looks like on the outside. But God does not look on outward appearance, as it said about David. He looks at the heart. And with all the advertising, with all that stuff that's always, and all the message that are being constantly conveyed that it is about what you look like, that is not true. That's a lie. Of course, you try to look nice, you try to look attractive. Nothing wrong with that. But that is not the essence of who you are. Who you are is inside, and what God looks for is that inner beauty from within. That's attractive, both to God, and can I say also to Christian guys. And if a guy is only after you because of what you look like, go find a different guy. All right? Her adornment. Secondly, her assignment. Her assignment. Verses 11 to 14. First of all, we have a regulation. A regulation in verse 11. Talks about how she's, her deportment, how she's supposed to present herself. Then he says, let a woman learn quietly with all submissiveness. We now move to a discussion about the woman's role in the church. From her attire to her activity. And so when it says, let a woman learn quietly with all submissiveness, the question is, what does he mean? What is Paul talking about here? We need to understand this. Is he anti-woman? And this is what a segment of those who interpret this want to say. Paul just didn't like women. He's putting women down. Quite the opposite. Now, first of all, I would have you notice that a woman is to learn. He's to learn, right? I let a woman learn. This is not, you know, off to the side, let the guys look after. This is not what he's talking about. Women are to be learners, and that itself raised the profile of women in the first century culture. We're all to learn, we're all to grow, and I hope it is within the heart of each one of us here that we want to learn, that we want to know more about God and his ways. For it was the Babylonian Talmud, which was a Jewish writing, that actually said, the man comes to learn, the woman comes to hear. And Paul overthrows that idea. There is a place for women, for her intelligence, for her place of growing in the Lord alongside of the man. So let's be really careful. That is not what Paul is saying here. Paul does not have an anti-woman bent. But the question here is, how? How is she to learn? And I'm not making anything up here. I'm just going through this word by word in terms of what Paul is writing. But there are a couple of terms here that we need to define. He says, first of all, she's to learn quietly. Let a woman learn quietly. Actually, the old King James is wrong. It says that she's to learn in silence. That gives the wrong idea here. The word for quietly literally has the idea of tranquility. It's the opposite of being loud and boisterous and outspoken. Now, there seems to have been a problem in the church in Ephesus where Timothy is right now of women creating problems. There's stuff going on, and she, what's that all about? And it's just kind of chaotic. He said, no. Learn in the context of what I've talked about just previous about the beauty of spirit, about a gentleness and a modesty. But don't be loud and outspoken when the church gets together. Secondly, he says to do it with submissiveness, which literally means to come under the authority of. Now, that's a problem word, and we're going to talk about that next time. So she's to be in a voluntary attitude of deference. We're going to unpackage that shortly. So he begins by saying women are to be learners and to do that without creating a disturbance, in willing submission to the leadership of the church. Now, so far, there doesn't seem to be any argument about what Paul is saying. The argument will come, is that still relevant for us today? We'll get there. So one, a regulation. Two, a restriction, verse 12. a restriction, verse 12. Paul further clarifies his injunction by discussing her role in more detail. She is to learn, but not in a teaching public setting of the church gathered. I do not permit a woman to teach or to exercise authority over a man. Rather, she is to remain quiet. She's to learn, but it says here, with deference to the male authority within the church. Now, I would need to make a point here as we move forward that there are all kinds of opportunity for women to exercise the gift of teaching. So, well, what if I have a gift of teaching? Paul says that women can't teach. That's not what he's saying. He's saying in the context of the church gathered in public settings, she is not to have the exercise the authority of leadership in a teaching role in that context. Titus makes it very clear that she is to teach other women. Let the older women teach the younger women. There are places of teaching children. There's all kinds of places of teaching. But in the context of the church, which seems to be the implied context, because you're going to be talking about eldership in just a moment, there's a restriction on that place for women. This comes out of an unashamed paternalistic understanding of the Bible. The Bible is a paternalistic book, and I'm going to unpackage that next time. It's an understanding of order and authority, where the men are to exercise the leadership and the women are to be in a place of submission to that leadership. But in our culture, people, if they would hear me say that, would set their hair on fire. This is sexism, and on it goes. But I got to stop there. What do we do with that? Now, that's the context of what Paul is saying here to this church in Ephesus. Now, does that apply to us, or is it cultural, like the wearing of head coverings for women? And that's the argument. Or does it go beyond that? And that's why I said it's going to take me a half an hour just to unpackage that for us, because that's really significant. How we get to the interpretation for ourselves is crucial. And so I'm going to just leave it there, and we'll pick it up next time. It's a terrible place to stop, but it'll get you thinking a little bit. And I want you to read ahead, and I want you to start saying, no, what do we do with that? Now, we can't argue that it's there. Can't just cut that piece out of the Bible and say, it's 2017, it's irrelevant. But I know we are fighting against culture, or at least Paul is, if we would apply this to today. But a set of key issues I would like to leave you with. First of all, and think about, what is submission, and what is the biblical perspective of submission? That's a key issue. And what is a biblical understanding of roles? And is submission and roles, are those bad words? Key question. The world has done a number on us, especially in the last 100 years. Feminism has had a dramatic impact even on the church. And I'll explain some of that next time. But we do need to talk about that. Some of it has had a positive effect in our culture, but I'll unpackage that. Secondly, is this simply cultural? Is this first century instruction for Ephesus alone? And if so, do we treat this like head coverings and adapt it to our culture? And how do we know what's what? I would also suggest there's a word for men here. If the women were not to take public leadership in teaching, who was? Who was to take the leadership? Their kids? The men. And so I think there's something to be said here to men. And finally, are we willing to come under the authority of the scriptures and heed its injunctions, no matter what we might think or what the world says? Are we good with that? Or do we just simply want what we want and apply our preferences in spite of it? Lots to think about, but it's 11:45. We want to sing a couple of more songs. And sorry, I have not wrapped this up. You got to come for part two, right? So and maybe half of you are going to stay away now. You're going to say, I don't want to hear this anymore. Or maybe you'll want to come and get the reasons for why, what I think it says. So I'll ask the worship team to come on up. Let's sing a couple songs sort of in response to this, and then we'll be dismissed.